On Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810, WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. Who is that? Sounds very much like a. I know it's not, but it sounds like Duran Duran a little bit.
No, it's not. It's Broken Bells, and okay. It's called "It's That Talk Again." That's okay. The song. So yeah, it's a good song.
A little Duran Duran esque.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, I could see that. Mm-hmm. I could see that.
We just had the Chiefs press conferences live from training camp in St. Joe, Missouri. We heard from Eric Bieniemy. We heard from Austin Ryder. We heard from Marcus Kemp. And some interesting things there. Ryder said something I didn't quite get. He was talking about the off-season program and staying in shape and, you know, making sure he was ready to go. And he said something called the bod pod. I wonder if that's like a food delivery service of some kind.
I think it's when you know how they have the Creo, like the ice thing chamber that you walk into.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what he was talking about.
Okay.
The cryo chamber. I think that's what they call it.
All right. The bod pod. I like that name. He also referred to Mecole Hardman as number 17. Guys still trying to learn each other's names. They don't spend different position groups. They just don't spend a lot of time together at training camp. They're all in separate meeting rooms. And then when they're on the field, the linemen aren't watching the receivers. They're taking care of their responsibility. I don't know why you'd ask an offensive lineman how the wide receivers look. They're not watching. They have what we call...
They asked about Patrick. Like, yes, you're going to watch film after practice.
Yes.
But a lot of what you're watching is not... It's your position group, not right. Other players. And, of course, like, what's... You can say he's not looking back at that. He's blocking for him. So...
Right.
It was just there was some always it's always fun questions at a training camp, but I thought there was some interesting stuff, especially with Bieniemy, kind of as you said before, avoiding what Damian Williams missing time early in camp means for
right.
what he'll be like early on in the season. How much is he actually missing? With you can study all the playbooks you want. You can know that, but
you can be in the classroom.
But as we said. Being up to game speed and getting pads on and having 11-on-11, there are some benefits to that because you don't get many padded practices anymore in the
nope.
NFL. It's not like it was in the early 2000s.
Not like when we went to River Falls and you had 2-a-days at 3 hours
yeah.
a pop. Each one of them were 3 hours.
Yeah, so you're not going to be as... How would I say, well-rounded going into the season in terms of, as we've seen, a lot of the complaints about the NFL early on in the season is that it's not crisp.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just what it's going to be like when you have to deal with, when you're dealing with like player safety is per se, taking away a lot of padded practices, of course they're not going to be look as crisp and sharp because you're not getting the amount of padded practices that teams used to get.
Yeah, and I remember when they went away with 2 days and people would say exactly what you said, Chris. Well, it's not crisp at the beginning. But it's like that for every team. It's not like somebody's got an
yeah.
advantage or a disadvantage.
Yeah. But I'm saying for a specific player who is missing a lot of these padded practices, you're
yes.
not going to get – you're not getting any more padded practices as you get closer to the season.
Right.
They decrease.
Right. And I think, you know, with Andy Reid's comments yesterday, he's frustrated with Damian Williams not being – healthy, not being ready to go. Maybe didn't care for what he did in the off season, and your coordinator is kind of there to defend you a little. Andy Reid doesn't really say things like that very often. Normally, Andy Reid is pretty reserved on the like. Well, yeah, he's at the training room. He's up there with Rick, and you figure it out, and that's how we roll. That's normally about what you get from Andy Reid, right? And then yesterday, kind of saying, yeah, I'm frustrated. We're all disappointed. Damian Williams isn't practicing. It's going on over a week now.
Well, especially with how well he performed in the latter half of
yeah.
last season, that's a piece that you want to make sure is established early in training camp. Who has, you know, the touches that he needs, the cohesion as we've talked about with Mahomes, the offense, spacing on the field, different formations, whatnot. So.
Yep. And we also heard from Marcus Kemp And I'm going to disagree with Marcus Kemp on one thing. That, not because I think he's wrong, just because I have a difference of opinion. And this is, believe me, this is not a big deal. He was asked about, is this, I always have to do this fake voice when it's not my question. So, do you think this camp is more competitive at the wide receiver position than it's been before? And he kind of said, no, not really. They always bring in talented guys. But I disagree. I think this is going to be one of the more competitive position groups on the team. I think it already is. I think it was going in. And now even more so. Gary Dieter, what does he bring to the team? And now he's been hurt. He's missed some practices. Mecole Hardman's going to make it. Tyreek Hill is going to make it. DeMarcus Robinson is going to make it. Sammy Watkins is going to make it. They held on to Byron Pringle all last year through the injury. They must like something about him. Marcus Kemp has been a really good special teams and role player. But as Eric Bieniemy says, we got to challenge him with more every year. So Marcus Kemp's got to step up. So he might have competition for his spot. You throw in Rashard Davis, who's had a pretty good first week and a half of camp. Jamal Curtis, I think, finally caught a pass today. I think I saw Nick Jacobs tweet that out. So if Marcus Kemp thinks the competition level's the same, I respectfully disagree. I think it's maybe as competitive as it's been in 4 or 5 years. And if you're not healthy, if you're Gary Dieter, and you're already on the borderline, not a good spot to be in. But I get it. I have back spasms too. I get lower back issues. You can't play. It sucks. There's really not a lot you can do about it outside of your standard ice and heat. There's nothing you can do until it's ready to go. So I get that. All right, we will get ready to take a timeout here. When we come back, we're going to bring in Jared Dubin, CBSSports.com. First time we've had him on the show. We'll talk a little National Football League, big picture. The Jaguars got, and I'm going to mispronounce the name, Ndakwe, close, one of their big defensive end players. Got him back in camp, so he avoids that August 6th magic date of losing an accrued season towards free agency. Boy, that front four at Jacksonville. Talk about that when we come back with Jared Dubin. That's going to be, I think that Jaguars defensive line versus Chiefs offensive line in week one, holy smokes, it will be on. We will take a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Who's that, Chris? That's a good one.
Tame Impala. Solitude is Bliss.
Okay.
I like that. Little psychedelic rock.
I like that. Going into our final 30 minutes here on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. Just carried our Chiefs press conferences from St. Joe. From training camp, we heard from offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy. We heard from wide receiver Marcus Kemp. We heard from offensive lineman Austin Ryder and wide receiver Marcus Kemp. Did I just say Marcus Kemp twice? I did. I just did. Okay. Just going through the list in my head. It's the way it goes. So we got that done. And, of course, our press conference coverage brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK and Worth Harley-Davidson. Joining us now on the line on this Sunday is Jared Dubin from CBSSports.com. Jared, thank you for joining us on this Sunday afternoon.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And also appreciate you being flexible because we never know when the Chiefs are going to talk after practice. It's always a fluid situation. We had scheduled you for 11 o'clock, so thank you for being flexible and sliding for us to 11:30.
Yeah, it's no problem.
All right, I was reading this morning, Jared, I was reading about, and I butchered the name once already. I'll try it again. For the Jacksonville Jaguars, Yannick Ngakoue. Gosh, I even rehearsed it like three times. Ngakoue showed up to camp, so he avoids that August 6th date to where he would have lost a year accrued towards free agency. And I got to looking at the entire defensive line in Jacksonville, and not that it's a secret, but I'm just reading through the names, and throw in Arby Jones, Marcel Darius, Calais Campbell, he had Miles Jack at linebacker, Jalen Ramsey, and I'm like, week one for the Chiefs, we're going to be excited, but damn, you better come ready to play.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good defense. Obviously, it's not quite as good as it was a couple of years ago. You know, Telvin Smith is sitting out the season. They cut Malik Jackson earlier this offseason. They're not quite as as strong up front as they used to be because of that. But it's still a very good defense. That's still the strength of their team, even after they brought in Nick Foles. It's a tough defense to beat, but I think we've also seen, you know, certain kind of offenses have success against them. And if you get out in front, that's especially valuable because that offense isn't really built to make comebacks.
We're speaking with Jared Dubin, CBSSports.com, and I'll just stick with the Jaguars for a second since we're going to see them in just a couple of weeks. You mentioned Nick Foles, former Chiefs backup, former Eagles, then back to the Eagles, won a Super Bowl, goes to the Jaguars. Does Jacksonville believe he's someone who can be there another 2 to 3 to 4 years and bring them up a step, or is he considered a placeholder for now?
I don't think you give him that contract that they gave him if they consider him a placeholder.
Right.
They gave him, what was it, $22 million a year or so. That's a big contract. There's a bunch of guaranteed money in there, over $50 million in guaranteed money. They can't even really get out of the deal with positive value until 3 years from now. So I would say, yes, it's pretty much definitely a long-term type thing.
What do they believe he brings to the table for them? And is it a system that he can adapt to pretty quickly, or does Jacksonville see this as, well, we have our system, but we think Nick Foles can fit with us?
I think that he obviously gives them an upgrade over who they had the past few years in Blake Bortles. Not that it would be all that difficult to provide an upgrade over what Bortles was giving them. But, you know, they also brought in John DeFilippo as their offensive coordinator, who was part of the staff in Philadelphia when Foles won the Super Bowl for them. He was obviously with Minnesota last season. They felt he was throwing the ball too much and got rid of him. Now he's in Jacksonville, so he should be at least comfortable. I don't think it's they're bringing him into whatever their offensive system was. I think that they are sort of building it around him, and DeFilippo is part of that.
They also bring Leonard Fournette back, and there was a time last year, Jared, where it looked like Jacksonville might just wash their hands of Leonard Fournette. They were frustrated. He was getting into arguments with the fans. They suspended him for a game. There were some real questions. There were questions even going back before that about his maturity level. What were they able to iron out over the offseason to make it suitable for both sides to get back to business?
To be honest, I'm not sure everything is 100% on it.
Okay, because that's where I was going. I don't see it either, but
yeah, I mean, it's. I think a lot of what goes on there is going to depend on how he plays during the season. Because if he does what he did last year or even the year before, I don't think they're going to be satisfied with that. I mean, they spent the number 4 overall pick on him. They sort of expected him to be a superstar running back like the other highly drafted running backs over the past few years, and he just has not been that at all. They brought in 2 more running backs in free agency this offseason with Alfred Blue and Thomas Rawls. They drafted a running back late in the draft, Raquel Armstead, who is getting a little bit of buzz coming out of camp. I think if Fournette doesn't turn into the player they envisioned, you could very easily see them sort of cast him aside. And, you know, by this time next year, he'll be looking for a new team.
We're speaking with Jared Dubin, CBSSports.com, National Football League. Another team the Chiefs are going to see twice this year, the Oakland Raiders, the Oakland / Las Vegas Raiders. And they've had an odd start to the camp in that Antonio Brown, you know, big money signing, big name, big personality, comes in. He arrives at camp in a hot air balloon, and everybody's going crazy. And then, you know what, my foot hurts. And then he tried to work out the other day, and he posted pictures of these welts on his feet, these bruises on his feet, and now he's seeing a foot specialist. They're saying it's not a big deal, but that's an odd way to open up the camp, that this had not been a problem before, or maybe he had it and just didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely odd, but, you know, early in camp is, I think, when you see teams get sort of the most conservative with their handling of injuries, and if they're saying it's not a big deal, it's entirely possible that it's not a big deal. If he starts sitting out 2-3 weeks and we're getting to the start of the season and he's not really gotten back into practice yet, that's when I think we need to start worrying. For right now, I think teams just tend to be overly cautious at the beginning of camp, and that's all right.
How excited are you to see Hard Knocks with the Oakland Raiders?
Oh, it's going to be incredible. for a lot of reasons that are not necessarily about how good I think the Raiders will be.
Well, I know they're not going to show us everything, but they're going to, you know, they'll show us a little bit. I'm interested to see how they deal with the fact that there was such a divide inside the organization last year, where if you're to believe the stories from the inside, where Gruden had his guys brought in and wanted them kept on one side of the building, and the other guys who were leftovers, who were still on the payroll, were kind of shuttled out to another part of the building. He didn't want them any part of it. And I'm just wondering what the dynamic will be with John Gruden and the scouts and the front office people.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of that was solved by the fact that, or not solved necessarily, but you won't probably see it on TV because most of the people that were on the other side of that argument are not with the team anymore. I mean, you saw before the draft, they got rid of essentially their whole scouting staff, and they wound up hiring a whole bunch of new people. They brought over an area scout from the Cowboys to be their director of scouting. They brought over, you know, West Coast area scouts from a number of other teams. So I think that they've got all new people in there, and the people that were, you know, I don't know if it was anti-Gruden as much as he was probably anti-them, those people aren't there anymore. So I don't think that divide is going to exist quite as much.
Now, I'll go back to something you hit on just a second ago. Do you think the Raiders are going to be good this year?
Not particularly. I mean, I think that their defense is still a major issue. It's, you know, everybody talked about the offense last season. The defense was significantly worse, like probably the worst defense in the league. And I don't know that they did nearly enough to upgrade it. And you throw that in with the fact they're in the same division as two of the three or four best teams in the AFC and the Chargers and the Chiefs. I just don't really see how it's going to happen for them.
We're speaking with Jared Dubin, CBSSports.com, talking the National Football League. Speaking of the other two teams in the division, the Chargers with Melvin Gordon. Jared, it's just my opinion. I don't know. I don't think there's any way he goes beyond that August 6th magic date. Maybe I'm mistaken. And the Chargers in the past have not shown a willingness to play ball. They, you know, Joey Bosa sat out games when he was a rookie. They don't cave to things like this. At least they haven't in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily see him going past that date either. He's obviously going to want to hit free agency if he can. And, I mean, if it was me, I would not pay him. I don't think I would really pay any running back $10 million or more. And you even saw Phillip Rivers come out and say, like, look, we'd love to have Melvin Gordon here, but we've got good depth at the running back position, and we can get by without him. And I think that's true. I think, you know, even last year was really the first year that he lived up to the sort of reputation that he had. He finally got over 4 yards a carry for the first time in his career, and he was a much better receiver last year as well. But, I mean, Austin Eckler brings a lot of the same things as a perimeter runner and as a receiver. They got Justin Jackson, who they can run with a little bit more up the middle. I mean, they're good at that spot if Gordon decides he really wants to hold out through the season. And I don't see a financial benefit really to it for him, and I don't see a future contractual benefit to it for him, because the best way he's going to get more money is to be on the field and play really well again.
And with Austin Eckler, it's the age-old saying, you know, when your opportunity is presented, you take advantage of it. And that worked not only for Austin Eckler, but for the organization as well, because you're right, as Phillip Rivers pointed out, they have other guys. When Austin Eckler had his chance last year, he performed very well. And they've seen a guy that they can use and that they can believe can be effective and don't have to pay $10 million to.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of how it works these days, you know? Like, you can get similar production from an elite running back as you can from a guy who is sort of your change of pace, pass-catching type back, and then, you know, another guy thrown in there. You just don't have to pay for that kind of production, and that's just the way it goes. I mean, it sinks for these guys who are putting their bodies on the line, and this is their livelihood, that they're just not as valuable as the position used to be. But the league is getting smarter about figuring this stuff out, and you realize you don't necessarily need one guy to get the job done at that spot, and especially when you can run sort of a game plan type offense like the Patriots have been doing over the last few years, where 1 week James White has 15 catches and the next week Sony Michel has 22 carries.
Right.
It's more about putting the guys in the best position to succeed than it is having necessarily one guy who's better than anybody else at that position, because you can do it for cheaper with guys that have certain skill sets as long as you know how to use them and when.
With the National Football League figuring out how to value running backs differently and, to be honest, cheaper than they did in the past, how do you believe things will unfold with the Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott? Now, he's in a different situation because he still has 2 years left on his rookie contract, but similar thing, is he a more important piece for what the Cowboys do than what Melvin Gordon is for what the Chargers do?
I think just on the surface, he probably is. They've sort of built that offense around him in a way that the Chargers have not built theirs around Gordon. But, even though they have done that, it's not like that offense has been, you know, lighting the world on fire over these past couple of years. Zeke himself has been very good, but last year the offense was 22nd in points, 23rd in yards. That's not exactly the kind of thing that you want to see when you're building your offense around a guy and trying to justify paying him, you know, more money than any other running back in the league. And I think when you look at 2 years ago when he was suspended for six games. The Cowboys, I believe they went 3-3 in those games, and they were 6-4 in the games without him. So basically it's, you know, a one-game difference in that period of time. They weren't all that much worse. And when you look at it, Alfred Morris and Rod Smith averaged the same number of touches and just about the same number of yards per game in that six-game span as Zeke did during the 10 games that he played. They really did not lose much in the running game. It was more of the passing game where they fell off, and that was because, well, Tyron Smith was out, and Dak Prescott got sacked eight times in one game, and then they started going into a shell in terms of their passing game over the next four or five games. And at the same time, Sean Lee was out, and their defense was terrible. It really was not as much of a Zeke is out thing as I think it's been portrayed to be. That said, I still think the Joneses will wind up paying him despite everything they're saying in public, because that's just what they do.
All right, we're speaking with Jared Dubin, CBSSports.com. You touched on the Patriots real quick. Let's go there. As you mentioned, how they do their run game with James White and Sony Michel. We've been saying for a number of years, Jared, I don't mean we like you and me. I mean collectively as football fans. Every year for the past, I'm going to say, 5 or 6 years, it's always thought, okay, well, this is the end of the Patriots. So Wes Welker's finally out. They finally got rid of Wes Welker. Maybe they'll slip back. No, didn't slip back. Gronk is finally retiring, so they don't have a tight end, and someone will knock off the Patriots. And every year we come back in January and February, and here are the Patriots. Do the Patriots have any major sore thumbs sticking out at Gronk? Do they have somebody to replace Gronk, or is it as simple as they'll find a way? Bill Belichick will find a way. He'll find a guy who can get certain things done, or if he needs two guys to fill the same role, he can do that too.
Yep, I think you're on it right there. They will figure it out. That's what they always do, and until they don't, I think we should operate under the assumption that they will.
They're like the Kansas Jayhawks basketball team. You don't pick against them to win the Big 12 until they actually don't win it, which happened this past year, but you still don't pick against them. Speaking with, that's just the way it is around here. Speaking with Jared Dubin, CBSSports.com, talking National Football League. You also write a lot about the odds in the National Football League, and I'm trying to remember, is it called the Pick Six?
That's the podcast that's hosted by Will Brinson for us.
Yeah,
yes.
And I see that posted there all the time, and obviously the Patriots and Chiefs are favorites this year. Have you kind of broken it down far enough yet to where you have your Super Bowl favorites?
I don't think so yet. I do think that those are probably, along with the Chargers, the three favorites to come out of the AFC. If the Chiefs, I think, can get to even like an average defense, I think they're sort of an overwhelming favorite in that conference. But if the defense is like where it was last year, then I think you could see one of those other teams knock them off before they get there. The NFC, I mean, just like pick something out of a hat. There's like eight right. Nine different teams seemingly that can make the Super Bowl out of the NFC. It's just, it's the much stronger conference and the much deeper conference, and it's going to be fun to see who comes out on top.
Well, the thinking here in Kansas City as far as the Chiefs' defense goes is if they could just get to middle of the pack, that would be good enough. And they went out and obviously spent a ton of money on Frank Clark. They spent some good money on Tyrann Mathieu. They shored up their defensive line with Ogba and Okafor, Alex Okafor, pardon me. And so they were aggressive. Brett Veach, the general manager, was very aggressive in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Have they done enough, in your opinion, to get to that middle of the pack or even be a little bit better than that?
I think a lot of it's going to depend on what they get out of their secondary. I know that they spent some money to upgrade the pass rush. They did lose Dee Ford, though, and obviously Justin Houston. Those are two pretty significant losses on the front, and they brought in other guys, and maybe it'll be sort of similar. The secondary was a pretty big issue for them last year. You know, if Tyrann Mathieu comes in and sort of solidifies things, if Juan Thornhill can play well as a rookie, and I really like him a lot, if he can get into the lineup and play well, that'll work out for them. And, they got to get better play on the outside too. They had essentially three guys that were slot corners last year, and that didn't really work out so well for them. So you got to get better play on the outside.
And I've seen three workouts now up in St. Joe for the Chiefs. You mentioned Juan Thornhill. I'm telling you what, Jared, he's fantastic. He's exactly what the kind of safety this team needs. And his pairing with Tyrann Mathieu is going pretty well in the opening days.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. He's a very, very good safety. I was surprised, frankly, that we were just talking about the Cowboys. I was surprised they didn't pick him. when he was on the board there. Apparently they just don't value safeties as much as they do defensive linemen, but I think it worked out very well for the Chiefs that he wound up sitting there for them a few picks later.
All right, speaking with Jared Dubin, CBSSports.com. All right, for Patrick Mahomes, there was a, I don't know what you want to call it, a narrative this offseason. Well, you can expect him to slip back a little bit. He might regress a little bit this season. And look, Jared, I don't think you look at 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards and then say if he comes in this season and it's, you know, 40 and 3,900, that's a huge regression. It's going to be almost impossible to put up those numbers again. I'm not going to put it past him, but I don't know what they mean by regression. Do they mean they don't win as many games? They don't make the playoffs? I didn't really understand that narrative.
Yeah, I mean, look, he could regress by like 20% and still be the best quarterback in the league. So, you know, it's just not a big deal, even if he does take a step backward, whether it's, you know, a drop in his completion percentage or just more interceptions or, you know, fewer touchdowns, fewer passing yards. I think he left some touchdowns on the field last year, frankly. You look at his deep passing numbers, they should have been, I think, even better than they were. He missed a few open guys, and that's pretty incredible when you consider how good he was already. But again, even if he takes a step back and he throws for 4,000 yards and 40 touchdowns, that's a 20% drop in both of those numbers, and that will still be the best quarterback in the league, more likely than not.
All right, Jared, final question for you. If you were able to make it through the 4.5-hour Hall of Fame marathon last night for the induction ceremonies, did you have a favorite player who went into the Pro Football Hall of Fame last night?
I did not see the induction ceremonies because I was at a wedding last night.
Oh, well.
Ed Reed was my favorite guy that got inducted because I went to the University of Miami, and Ed Reed's part of the greatest college football team of all time.
Did you see Ed Reed's bust?
I did not, but I'm very excited to go look at it.
Oh, my
gosh. You mentioned it.
As soon as you're done with this phone call, just go look at Eric Reed Hall of Fame bust. It is fantastic. They got it perfect.
I hope it's got the beard on it.
It's got the beard. It's got the hair. It's got everything. It's perfect. And I had stated this earlier. Look, I wasn't old enough to have watched Johnny Robinson play safety for the Chiefs, but it was fitting that he went in with Ed Reed because they're two of the best of their generations who played that position. So I'll take it. Ed Reed, I'm good with that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Hey, Jared, thank you very much. I appreciate your time on this Sunday. And again, thank you for being flexible with us and joining us here on the show.
Yeah, it's no problem. Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. And Jared Dubin, CBSSports.com. Have you seen, Chris, have you seen Ed Reed's bust that's in Canton, Ohio?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And his fit yesterday was also really, really good. Also, want to make one correction. I got a message from Brandon Zinner. Okay. Thank you for looking out. It was not Marcus Kemp. It was DeMarcus Robinson, but I kept hearing Marcus down the line, and
okay,
no one told me because they went right to it.
Okay.
So it was DeMarcus Robinson. I made it clear in the podcast when you go on to 810WHB.com.
Okay.
So it was DeMarcus Robinson, not Marcus Kemp. The names sound very familiar, and so I kept thinking I heard Marcus instead of DeMarcus.
Okay.
So it was DeMarcus Robinson, not Marcus Kemp.
Well, and I'll defend Chris here. When he's trying to listen to the actual show, plus the line from St. Joe to hear who's being introduced, it's hard.
And usually they'll announce, like, someone at the will be like, all right, here in 30 seconds, it's whatever, but they didn't do it that time. So it was pretty quick. So our mistake right there, that's on me. So it was DeMarcus Robinson who spoke. I made that clear in the podcast.
Okay.
So it's DeMarcus Robinson who spoke, not Marcus Kemp.
Okay. Got that cleared up. The world will still keep spinning somehow. I bet it will. All right, good stuff from Jared Dubin, CBSSports.com. And again, go to his page on that website. He's got a ton of content on there, NFL, NBA, a little bit of everything. Good stuff. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap up the final few minutes, and then we'll get ready to magically switch out the studio, and we'll be in with baseball tonight from noon to 1 o'clock. Quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Back for the final couple of minutes of Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. Coming up at noon, we'll have baseball tonight. Get you ready for Royals and Twins, Game 3 of their series up in Minneapolis. And then later tonight at 9 o'clock, we'll have Sporting KC and the Seattle Sounders. By the way, quick note from our friend Conrad McGorkin, who's very popular on Twitter. Did you know 13 years ago today, the Royals signed Patrick Mahomes Sr.? Little Chiefs-Royals tie-in. Good stuff, Conrad McGorick. I guess he was looking back. He's got a picture of transactions from his career and found that on this date, the Royals signed him. Also on this date, August 4th, 1984, Prince's album Purple Rain began a 24-week run on top of the Billboard album chart, sixth longest of all time. One of my favorite all-time albums. Maybe, I hate to play favorites here, but you'd have to go with that or Michael Jackson's Off the Wall or Thriller. To me, they're both really good. But Prince's Purple Rain, a little bit of everything for you on that album. Fantastic stuff. All right, good show today. We had Alec Trost up in St. Joe providing live updates from Chiefs training camp. Good stuff up there. We had Max Reaper on the show, the editor-in-chief from Royals Review, talking a little what you can expect the rest of the season and what he thought about the Royals. Ned Yost saying they're not going to experiment with the opener this season. We also had all the Chiefs press conferences. We heard from Eric Bieniemy. We heard from DeMarcus Robinson. We heard from Austin Ryder. So good stuff there from the Chiefs as they get ready to. It's less than a week now till they're going to be on the field playing against another team, the Cincinnati Bengals, next Saturday. And we also had Jared Dubin on the show, CBSSports.com, first-time guest. Good stuff as well on there as well. All right, we'll say goodbye for this show, but we're not going anywhere. We're going to switch out the studio, and then we'll be back with baseball tonight. Thank you to Chris Bohlig for handling the show today. My name is Brad Porter. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll talk baseball next.